Welcome to another episode of Awakening Through COVID-19. Today I will be speaking with Michael Priestley. Mike is a fellow coach and trainer and has worked in the sales field for most of his working life in management, leadership and development. We met in 2004 while we were on our coaching journey together, and he has been a supportive presence in my life ever since. It is a privilege to welcome Mike on the show today, and I do hope you will enjoy our conversation and that it is insightful for you. Welcome, Mike. So welcome, Mike. I'd like to just hear a little bit about you first. Could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Mike Priestley. I'm a coach and I'm a trainer, and I'm an NLP master practitioner.
Okay. What else are you?
I'm a father. I'm a grandfather. I'm a householder, yeah. Ratepayer, all of that stuff.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. The first thing I'd like to do is just to check in on how you're doing on the 14th of May, 2020, in light of the situation that we're in at the moment.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit like Groundhog Day, isn't it? You know, You sort of get up and it's the same day, and you look outside and the weather's good. It's a bit cooler, but it's good. Mm-hmm. And the world doesn't look any different, but you know that it is. It is different because the things that make up your life, you know, the shops that you go to, the barbers that you would love to go to, the pubs, the cafes, the town, the meeting people, the people are not available to you, not even your family. And I think that's very hard.
And in terms of since this the lockdown began, what's been your experience since the beginning?
I don't want to complain because I'm in so much a better position than an awful lot of people who are out there. I mean, there's an awful lot of anxiety out there. Mm-hmm. You know, people are worrying about getting paid, keeping their jobs, finding things for the kids to do, keeping the kids educated. Being able to get exercise is a terrible worry for parents and for people generally. I'm at an age now where I receive a pension, so I don't have those kind of worries. I live in a nice house, so I've got space to move around in the house, and I've got access to fields. So you know, I can walk. You know, well, I do walk for about 4 miles a day. So in that respect, I'm better off than most people. Having said that, I'm in an age group that is particularly at threat. In fact, I read something this morning. You read things, and they bother you because you read things and you know that some of them are true, or most of them are true. I read one this morning that said that over 65s are 34 times more likely to die from this than people who are at working age, which, you know, is a scary number. So, you know, in that respect, it's worrying, but I can't really say that it's affecting my life to the point where, you know, I'm feeling sorry for myself. I'm not. I'm trying to help other people if I can. I've offered myself for free coaching sessions, and I've had some fabulous sessions with some of my clients.
So what is, I mean, in terms of the numbers you were talking about earlier, I there's also reports of 90-year-olds recovering from this in hospital and returning home. So
yeah.
I mean, it may sound like the numbers that you're listening to or reading in that moment are scary, but there's also a flip side.
Yeah, and I think the thing about the virus is that there's so much that's unknown.
Mm.
I mean, it's absolutely unknown mm-hmm. why somebody who's 90 years of age should survive it. Lots of other people don't.
Yeah.
In fact, there's not enough information about why anybody survives it mm-hmm. and other people don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, is it genetic? Is it cultural? Is it ethnic? Mm-hmm. There are some pretty scary ethnic figures around
mm-hmm.
on the way this thing is working. I think the thing is that there could be some enormous good that comes out of it. There is the potential for that. One of my clients that I was speaking to recently, she'd not been furloughed. She was still getting paid and she was working from home. And she felt that she still had to do 7.5 hours a day in order to justify her salary.
Mm.
Where on top of that, she's got all the kids at home. She's got to homeschool them. She's got to do all that kind of thing. And everything's piling in, you know.
Mm.
And one of the things about it is that there's a lot of things that she was doing in her 7.5 hours when she was going into the office that she can't do anymore. She can't influence so much of the stuff that she used to be able to influence because it's not influenceable from home.
Mm.
So, you know, one of the things that I pointed out to her was that it's a tremendous opportunity for her to spend time with her children.
Mm.
Yeah, she's got three girls, two of them are at university and they've all come home to lockdown.
Mm.
And one of them is still small, yeah.
Mm.
And it's a great time to spend family time.
Yeah.
So, you know, she doesn't look at them as a problem, but she sees them as being people and something to enjoy. Then she will probably enjoy them more. I don't think she'd seen it from that point of view before. Yeah.
No.
And
in terms of, I get that you've been working with clients and helping them out, but has that work been supporting you through this time in a way?
Massively.
And how is that?
Well, it makes you feel useful. And I think it's important that we should all feel useful rather than just spectators of mm-hmm. something that's happening out there. And this is a place where I can tell you one of those stories if that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an app that's going around called Nextdoor. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Mm.
But it tells you how things are going locally, and if people have want to sell a bike, or they need groceries, or they need mm-hmm. some help or something. While I was doing my walks, there's a slope. It's a long slope. It's not a proper hill because I live in Cambridgeshire. They don't have the proper hills here. But I got to the top of the slope and I thought, wouldn't it be nice if there was a bench there?
Mm.
And I put it on this Nextdoor thing. And within 12 hours, somebody in the village had made a bench, taken it up there and put it in there. And I was so impressed. A guy mm-hmm. and his son got mm-hmm. together and they did that. And I thought that was fabulous. What a fabulous mm-hmm. thing to do. So, you know, and I was thinking about that. And I was thinking, well, I wouldn't be much good at making a bench because I don't have the workshop. I don't have the tools. I don't have the wood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I thought, well, okay, I can't do that. So what can I do?
Yeah.
And nice. So I put it on there and that's how I got into doing the coaching sessions.
Yeah, lovely. That's wonderful.
I think people have been appreciative of it. So.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So, you know, in that respect, I think it's done me an awful lot of good because it's actually given me a purpose. And I think one of the things that we're all lacking through this is a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You've sort of been told to put your life on hold for an indeterminate period.
Yeah. What are the three things that you've learnt since this has started about yourself, about the world?
I've learned that I don't need stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think a lot of my life was about hunter gathering, and I think a lot of us do that. Mm. You know, we probably don't see ourselves as that, but you know, you walk out and you walk around John Lewis and think, oh, that would be nice, or this would be nice, or oh, wouldn't it be good if I got this? And you're just thinking about the next thing to buy and the next thing to do to improve your life and getting it. And when you can't get it, Amazon accepted. When you can't get it and you're not doing that kind of stuff, you just realize that a lot of that stuff is not really important.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that to be learned. I think that's a big learning point. Other things. I don't watch TV a lot. I thought I would be. I thought I'd be binging on TV, but I'm not. I'm finding things to do. I'm appreciating nature more. I'm keeping fitter. I'm walking 4 miles a day, as I said, which is about 10,000 steps. And there's very rarely, unless the weather's really, really bad, a day that would go past when I wouldn't do that. Okay. And I've got to know the neighbourhood. I've got to know the countryside of the neighbourhood, not the streets and all that kind of thing, but the routes to the villages and the and things like that.
Ah, lovely. Yeah. Are you using your car as much?
Hardly ever. Hardly ever. You know, I sitting on the drive, and if I have to go and pick up a prescription or something like that, or I allow myself one trip out a week. But Etna's talking about taking over that, which is to go out to the local garage and buy a newspaper on a Saturday morning. It's one of these that has a Marks and Spencers, so you can go in and buy a cake or something, you know. But that is probably that, and the walking is the extent of my going out at the moment. Well, I also thought I'd be drinking a lot. I'm finding I'm not. You know, I might have a beer in an evening, but I'm a long way from binging on stuff like that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, are you finding that you're holistically more healthier then as a result of this?
Yeah. I mean, I'd appreciate it if it showed in my waistline a bit more. But there's little danger of that happening.
Okay. What is your relationship like with the virus?
It's one of fear. Apprehension. I think there's a bit of anger in there as well. I'm quite angry at it because of what it's doing to everybody. I see it as an evil. I wonder what's going to happen. I'm unclear about what the future is going to be with this thing. And I think everybody is. I think even the people who are trained in this stuff, I think they're also seeing that. And that's a worry. You know, that's problematic.
Have you found that since the beginning that fear's decreased at all or changed or?
Yeah, I think at the beginning it wasn't so much fear as panic. Everybody thought that everybody's going to die. I remember there was a virologist from Cambridge University came on, and he said, nobody's got any immunity to this thing. We are all going to get it. That's what he said. At some stage, everybody's going to get it. And of course, if they don't do something about it, then that's a possibility. But then I think back to probably the last time we had something like this. I know we've had SARS, which was fairly localized. Ebola, which was again contained within a certain area. And yeah, that concerns me as well, because, you know, I've just reeled off two other viruses that could have done this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you do worry if this is the first of many. Yeah.
Mm.
And whether there are more coming along. And you know, so that's a worry. But then I think about the last time this actually happened in the Western world, which was the Spanish flu in 1918. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which my grandfather got and recovered from, and they thought he was gonna die with that.
Mm.
And that disappeared. You know, they didn't have a vaccine for it.
Okay.
So where is it now? Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously it went away, and you know, maybe that's what will happen to this. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's panicking, and you know, maybe one day we'll get up and there's no cases, and we all wonder what happened.
Yeah,
what was all that? That's what I hope for. That right. would be my hope, is that it mutates itself into non-existence.
Yeah. Right, because as a virus, it's just, I mean, it doesn't have a soul. It doesn't, it's just a thing that doesn't come alive until it's in a body. So potentially that's possible.
Well, that's an interesting one. You know, does it have a soul, or is it part of the world's soul?
Yeah, that's another way of looking at it. Exactly.
Yeah. If we're talking holistically, yeah, it's part of nature.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
And, you know, as part of nature, you know, is this what happens when you destroy the planet, when any species becomes a threat to nature? Is this what nature does? I don't know. You know, we've had it pretty easy for the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, but I mean, if you go back before that, there was cholera in Victorian times, which wiped a lot of people out. There was plagues.
Yeah.
If you go back 100 years before that. So this is not new. Science has helped us to manage with it, and it's given us a fairly easy ride.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a very easy ride for the whole of my lifetime.
Yeah.
And that is spectacular.
It is.
But the thing is that is not the norm. Yeah, the norm is that this kind of thing happens.
Yeah, but we're not used, and it's what you said. You know, you've had a lifetime of none of this happening, and then all of a sudden it's like a shock to the system.
And then I think there could be an awful lot of good that comes out of this. In so much that all of a sudden everybody is focused on healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lots and lots of money is going into healthcare. 6 billion euros has been put forward by the European Union to find a vaccine. You know, with that kind of money and those kind of resources, could it be that they come up with and I use this term loosely, an antibiotic for viruses. Yeah. So maybe we finish up with a cure for the common cold out of this.
Yeah.
With a cure for the flu, or a treatment.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we will find from this a whole new raft of things, help people afterwards. I certainly hope so.
So do I.
I certainly hope so. And then, you know, that's the impact that it could have on medicine.
Mm.
And that could be a brilliant thing.
Mm.
The rampant profiteering that's been going on, the capitalism without boundaries that's been taking place. You know, you would like to think, I would like to think that as well as good coming out in a medical sense, somebody might think, you know, maybe it's enough's enough. Maybe we ought to do something about this. Maybe we ought to limit the amount of power and wealth that a person can accumulate. You know, how on earth is one person going to spend £1 billion? And you know, you've got people out there who've got 10, 20, 30, 40, I don't know what the richest people have. And you know, maybe we could look at a different way of looking at things. Okay, why don't we give people a living wage? And let them do with it what they want to do with it. You know, and I mean, this idea that everybody's going to sit down and watch EastEnders, that will happen with some people. There's a minority of people who would who would do that. And you know, if that makes a person happy...
Yeah, then so be it.
Yeah, I think there's enough capacity for generating wealth in the world that maybe, I don't know, 20%, 25%, you know, of people will be doing us a favour if they're not getting involved in that, because they'll give the opportunity to other people.
Those that want to,
Yeah, and I think about that. But then I go back to the, you know, sort of Victorian ethic that that we all work to. If you're not rich and you're not making an awful lot of money, then you're worthless and you want to go to the workhouse. You know, and I think there's a lot of workhouse thinking that is still going on out there.
And it's outdated now.
And it's outdated. You're right. It is outdated. But I think the Tory party is outdated. Just as much as Corbyn's Labour was outdated. Yeah, I mean, so some good ideas, but there were some very dated class war battles being fought.
So some people are even questioning whether politics is outdated in the way it stands at the moment.
I think so. When I was listening to Eisenstein?
Eisenstein, yeah.
When I was listening to Eisenstein, the thing that occurred to me was that these are good solutions. But they're solutions that are possible with a world government. And, you know, maybe nationalism is outdated. You know, maybe there should be, you know, but then, you know, you're into Star Wars stuff. I don't know. I know people who would die rather than give up their nationalism. I think we saw that during the Brexit campaign.
Yeah, we did. Has there been anything which has helped you through this time, be it music, art, poem, the community? I know your work has helped.
My thoughts have helped me. Zoom has helped me. Using Zoom, you know, I'm probably socializing more now than I was before because of that. I run a quiz night twice a week. We do a family night, which we've got running tonight, which is with all the family that we've got in Ireland. You know, it's just a certain group. I've done a family day with my sister and her girls and my kids, and you know, we've enjoyed that and we've laughed at that. I did a session with the old boys from Barnsley, where I come from, the other day, and we all enjoyed that, you know, looking at how decrepit all of us have become, seeing as we're the only ones who can remember when we weren't decrepit, when we were handsome and beautiful and doing the stuff, you know. So I mean that was a really good session as well, so you know. And then of course it's also made it possible for me to do the coaching. I don't know that I would have been able to be as effective on the phone. Although one of my clients will only use the phone.
And that's okay too.
And that's okay. But that's her choice.
Yeah. Is there one piece of music that you would choose? And it could be anything.
Yeah, I think there is. And I think what it is it's about what's going on out there. And it's about the way that we're relating to this virus. And the song would be, I heard it through the grapevine.
Lovely.
One, because it's a beautiful piece of music.
And yeah.
It goes back to my youth, and it takes me back to places, you know, when I first heard it.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely fantastic. But I also think it's got an awful lot to say about what's happening to us all.
Yeah.
Now.
So, Mike, what is your new normal going to look like? What would you change?
It would be nice to get my life back to some extent.
Yeah.
I think I'm really going to appreciate the freedom that we took for granted. You know, that you could get up on a morning and you could do this, or you could do that, or you could do something else. And now you get up and you can do one thing, two things. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that will, I don't think I'll ever take for granted again going out and doing Christmas shopping.
Mm.
Yeah. Going down to the pub and having somebody pour me a pint and sitting down and enjoying it and sitting with other people. Yeah. I don't know. And, you know, I don't know if we're going to get that back. I mean, I hope we are. Going out for a meal, you know, and being able to choose what you want to have rather than having to forward plan so that you've always got stuff in, you know.
Mm.
You know, going to, I don't know, Burger King or McDonald's, yeah. And yeah, just because you fancy it.
Yeah.
Greasy spoon for your breakfast,
yeah.
You know.
It's the freedom of choice, just being able to do what you want.
Yeah, walk around a bookshop when you're not going to buy anything, but you just want to have a look at the spines and the titles and
have a browse,
and wonder whether you fancy that or not.
Mm,
yeah.
Okay. Will you be walking a lot more because you have been?
I hope so. Yeah, I do because I have enjoyed that.
Mm.
Enjoyed. It's hard to get started, you know, put your gear on, get your boots on, get out, walk.
Mm.
When you're out there, it gives you a bit of that freedom.
Mm.
Yeah. You are now somewhere that is 2 miles away from where you live.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know that you've got the energy and you've got the ability to, under your own power, walk back and get back. You know, you're not stuck. And I think that's a good feeling, and I think that has replaced for me some of the freedom that I had walking around Saffron Walden or walking around Cambridge.
Nice.
Yeah.
What is it time to let go of?
I seem to have been letting go of an awful lot of stuff recently that has not been of my choice. I think it's a hard one to say because, you know, it's a sort of letting go of expectancy, really.
Mm.
You know, that you expect things to happen and things to get better and things to be as they've always been. I think the expectancy that is always going to be your life, I think that is a big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. And it's hard. And, it's hard for me because, you know, you think, well, when you've done with expectancy, what happens then?
Yeah. What would you like to see happen in the world as a result of this?
I would like people to continue caring. They've begun to care.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing. And not just care about superficial things. I think they're caring about bigger things now.
Mm.
Yeah. And I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see a Labour government.
Okay.
I'd like to see politicians who would make decisions for the people rather than for vested interests, whatever they are, you know.
Right.
Whether it's trade unions or whether it's big business or whatever, I would like them to make decisions for the people.
Okay.
Which is what we vote for when we put them in.
Yeah. What wisdom would you like to share with the listeners?
The wisdom I'd like to share is that everything passes.
Mm.
Everything passes with time.
Mm-hmm.
And that we become assailed by our own norms, and we're trying to bring our norms into this situation. The norm being you get up and you go out and you work, and you're finding that those norms aren't possible, and that is delivering a great deal of anxiety to people. Yeah, because and the anxiety is there because they can't actually know how to live under these circumstances because they've never had to do it before.
Yeah.
And there will be a norm, and life will go on. Yeah. Mm. And life will continue to be good.
Mm.
Yeah. And we will all be able to enjoy what we or versions of what we've enjoyed in the past.
Mm.
And look forward to it. Yeah. Mm. Look forward to the breakout.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say look forward to the breakout, my father went down the pit when he was 14. Yeah. Mm. The nation was on the brink of war. The way that they worked down there is they had these small horses, which were called ponies. And they were down there to pull the pit tubs with the coal, and they'd bring it up to the area where they could move it upstairs. And the first, as a 14-year-old coal miner, his job was to look after one of the pit ponies because he would lead it and feed it and so on. It was an agricultural job down the mine, you know. And he was doing that. And anyway, the pit ponies never came up. They worked a shift and then another one. But they always stayed down there. The stables were down there, and everything was down there. Yeah, which, think about that. That's, you know, when it was the pit holidays, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't get much of a holiday, but they'd get a week off during the summer. At that time, they brought the pit ponies up because there'd be nobody down the mine to feed them and look after them and so on.
Mm.
And they'd put them into a field. And my dad told me that once they saw this field and they saw the sunshine, they went absolutely crazy. They jumped up and down. They frolicked. Mm. They ran around the field like crazy things because all of a sudden they could be what God designed them to be. At that point, been used in a way that they weren't designed to be. Well, at this moment in time, right, we are being used in a way that we weren't designed to be. Social animals, right? We mix with people, and to be told that you can't mix with people, interface with people, is taking us away from what we were designed for.
Yeah.
And we're all feeling that.
Mm.
And I think when this thing is over and mm-hmm. that restriction is gone, and we can go back to being what we're supposed to be, the social animals that we're designed to be. And when we can go to the pub and go to the rest, just think how marvelous that's going to be.
Mm.
How amazing that's going to be. Mm. And think about what your equivalent of running around the field is going to be.
Yeah. Nice.